Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And I'm here live and in the flesh. Well, I guess I'm in the flesh. I feel like I am. Anyway, I'm here with Madison Bennett. Maddie, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
You don't feel comfortable sitting over in the other seat, you know?
I don't. It feels weird looking across at you in my usual seat.
Anyway, we're here tonight and glad to be here with everyone. Always good to be in office with the crowd. And we're here tonight, Maddie, on an open show. That means our listeners are our guests. They get to call in and ask any question they want. And it can be anything dealing with your personal finance, money. We're here to help you and answer it and give you some guidance. And you get to direct that conversation. We're not going to, unless you don't call in, then we'll direct the conversation. But if you call in, ask your question, we'll do the best we can to help you get a good handle on what it is that's an issue for you. And if you want to do that, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, a topic that is near and dear to you, and you say, hey, if you can help me with this would be very beneficial, 410-922-6680. And Maddie, you're sitting over there saying, I'm ready for him this time. I'm ready. He asked me what is on my mind. I'm ready. I got something. Or do you?
Go ahead. Wanted to get your thoughts. I feel like I have many clients ask me about buying gold and silver, so I wanted to get your thoughts.
You know, there are a lot of hucksters out there, in my opinion, who are selling gold and silver as if it's a incredible inflation hedge. Well, you know, between 1980 and 2010, the price of gold made nothing.
Nothing at all.
1980, 2010, no rate of return. You know, because it peaked out at about 800,
okay,
850 in 1980. And it took until almost 2010 to return to that price level. And so you literally made nothing. Now, the rate of inflation during that period of time was at least average 3 to 4%. So what inflation hedge was it? Now, they always will say, yeah, but ultimately it did catch up. And, you know, ultimately it's at 1900 now. But think about that. In 1980, you paid $800 for gold. It's now at 1900. You got one doubling of your money. The same period of time, stocks went up 11-fold. 11-fold, okay? Actually, it's more than that, actually, because it went from 1,000, it's up 30-fold.
Oh my gosh.
So now, which is a better inflation hedge? Stocks, which actually price in the cost of inflation?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a business and you're doing well, you're going to price in inflation all the time.
Right.
And that's what inflation is. It's businesses increasing the cost of goods and services. So what would you rather have as an inflation hedge? The companies that price in the cost of the goods or services, or a commodity that sits in the ground? And if everybody took off all their gold jewelry, if the price of gold shot up to $3,000 an ounce, and everybody who had gold jewelry took it off and said, wow, $3,000 an ounce, I'll take it. You know, and they dumped it on the market. Where's the price of gold going to go?
Down.
Because it's a supply and demand issue.
Right.
It's not an inflation hedge. It's a supply and demand issue.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who doesn't understand that is barking up the wrong tree and trying to lure you into something that isn't necessarily true, in my opinion. So it doesn't mean that you can't do some trading plays in gold. Like when gold went down to $300 an ounce from $800 an ounce, doesn't mean that it wasn't a reasonable opportunity to trade gold for a period of time. But as a long-term investment hold, it's just like absolutely ridiculous.
Yep.
And then you got the preppers who believe the world's coming to an end and they want to own gold for that. Well, I sit there and think, if the world's coming to an end, your gold isn't going to do a dying
exactly.
bit of good for you. Anyway, we got a call. Let's go to Kathy in Dundalk. Kathy, how can we help you?
I inherited a house from my mother when she passed away.
Okay.
And I didn't get it appraised at that time, and I'm selling it now, and it's been 5 years.
Okay.
There's going to be a large profit on it. Can I take off, like, all the electric bills that I paid and the water bills and the building insurance as part of the cost?
You never rented it, right?
Correct.
No, you can't. Anything you did is a capital improvement. So if you put a roof on it or a new air conditioning system or something like that, that could be a deduction for you. Any of the expenses you're putting into it to get it ready for sale right now, that can be a deduction. But no, the cost of maintaining the house for the 5 years, no, it will not be a deduction. Now, keep in mind that if you can go back and estimate what the value of that house was at the time of your mother's death, that's your cost basis. Even if you didn't get it appraised at that time, you still have the right to determine what the value of that house probably was in 5 years ago when you inherited. That's your cost basis, and it's only the appreciation from that price to this price that you sell it at that you're going to pay your capital gains tax on. All right?
How would I get something like that?
Well, you can look it up on the Real Property Search line. You can look for common area houses and things of that sort, see what they sold for in 2018, let's call it. There's all kinds of ways. Talk to a real estate agent. If you have a friend that's a real estate agent, ask them if they could give you an approximation of what the value would have been back then, all right? But that's okay. A great call. Good question. I have to go. We'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli, and I have a question for you. Is your financial advisor a doctor of personal financial advice? Do you get strategies to reduce taxation, Social Security, Medicare advice, sophisticated retirement planning, investment allocation strategies, estate planning, or help with any issue of money? It is time you do a financial physical with me and my team at the consulate and experience the difference. You hear the depth of knowledge we have about personal finance, so do a financial physical and you'll experience what we believe an advisor should do for you. They should be independent, experienced, credentialed, fee-only, comprehensive fiduciaries. They should be a doctor of personal finance and not salespeople selling you products. Set up an introductory meeting by calling 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or go online, financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com. It's time you experience the difference.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli here with Maddie Bennett, and we're on an open show. So if you want to call in and ask a question, lines are all open. I was hoping somebody would get online when we were on our break, but I didn't give out the number before we went on our break. So let me give it out now, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to get online and ask your question, like our last caller just did and asking about the issues of inheriting a house and how to pay taxes on it. And it's been, 5 years and so forth. So if you got a question, whatever it is, estate planning, income taxes, insurance, auto, home, life, property casualty, whatever, we're here to help you and answer those questions. The one I talked to was Sean about this morning, Maddie, was the Maryland 529 plan. Yeah, so the Maryland 529, there's everybody has been talking about, oh my gosh, I got to get out of the Maryland 529. I said, no. You need to get out of the Maryland 529 prepaid trust.
Right.
That was the bad one. We've been telling clients that for almost 20 years now. Don't get into the prepaid trust. And here are some reasons why. And most of our clients avoided that, never had that issue. I don't think I've had hardly any calls from any clients upset about their Maryland prepaid trust account because, for the most part, we told them not to get into it.
Right.
So now Maryland has stopped the Maryland prepaid trust totally.
Altogether?
It's all together stopped. They turned over the assets to the treasurer of the state of Maryland and said, here, you figure out what everybody's supposed to get. Well, that was the reason we told people not to get into it because, you're sitting there and they're bringing the money in And what they're guaranteeing them is 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when your child goes to college, whatever the cost of a Maryland State University is, whatever you paid today is good for tomorrow. Okay? So they have to assume what the rate of inflation is for that college tuition. Mm-hmm. And then they had to invest the money to keep pace with that rate of inflation. It was a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
And especially when they proved they couldn't do it very well back in 2001, they ran into problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to think you were going to not run into problems again in the future? Anyway, never been a fan of it. But there are a lot of cool strategies you can use with the Maryland 529 if you use the investment plan.
Right.
That's the plan to use. And there's different types of ways to invest that money depending on which strategy you're using. And with this new tax law, Secure 2.0, there's an excellent, great amount of 529 strategies you can use. Anyway, we got a caller on line. We have numerous lines open, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask your question, we're going to see what Steve wants. Steve in Baltimore, how can we help you?
I heard you talk about 529s this morning.
Okay.
And wanted to know, you know, basically where we should go from here.
Yeah,
we're in the investment plan now, but
you're in the investment plan. That's where you want to be. You don't want to leave the investment plan. You want to focus on, you know, when are my kids going to college? You know, how much of that are we going to need? You know, get a lot more conservative as they're like, you know, a year or two away from college, especially if the market's not, if the market's down. Let's say my kid's 2 years away from college and all of a sudden the market's down. You know, I'm not going to necessarily liquidate my 529 equity holdings because my child's getting close to college. If, on the other hand, the market's up and it's been up for a while and my children are a couple years away from college, I'm going to start getting a lot more conservative because I know I'm going to need it in a year or so. So you're good with the Maryland 529 investment plan. Was there something specific you were curious about?
Well, are there other ways of doing this, 529?
No. You're 529 is a 529. It doesn't matter what state you're in. The only thing you're looking at is what are the costs of the 529 and so forth. Now, you know, one thing that we do, you've been investing in this for a while, or did you just start?
Just started. Had a grandchild and started his college fund.
Okay. So you just started. Now, are you the account holder, or is your child the account holder?
My child is.
Your child's the account holder, but you just contribute to that account, and you get your tax deduction for it, right?
Correct.
So, you know, the funny thing is that if you put $5,000 in that plan, and you did it directly, either you could take that tax deduction, or you could let your child take that tax deduction. That's totally your choice. It doesn't have to be you if you contributed it.
Yeah, well, guess who's getting it?
Your child's getting it, right? What?
I am.
You're going to get it. Yeah, well, that's a good one. And that's the way you should do it, you know. Do you have any grandchildren that are going to private schools at this point in time, or you just, like, got the first grandchild?
Well, they're too young to go to private school so far. But that'll probably start in about 2 or 3 years.
So when you have young children or grandchildren or even your own children that are going to private school and you're paying a lot of tuition, something that, you know, you ought to think about is deposit it into the Maryland Investment 529 plan using the money market fund. And then a week or two or three later, you pull it out and pay your tuition. And for that, you're going to get a tax deduction to do that. A lot of people don't realize that, but that's a perfectly logical strategy. But, you know, so those are some of the things that you can do that you ought to think about. But, you know, it sounds like you're doing the right thing. You know, you're putting some money in there and you're taking the tax deduction. You get up to $5,000 per child per year. So if you had two grandchildren and you and your wife put in $5,000, you could get $10,000 in deductions for the two children.
Okay.
That's only a Maryland tax deduction, keep in mind. So it's not a big tax deduction, but it's nicer than no tax deduction, right?
Much better than no tax deduction.
Good point, Steve.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Bye. Good question. Anyway, we're here on an open show. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. Nobody's on the line. We're not as popular as we can be there, Maddie. You know?
I guess not. Something, scaring them away.
Something is obviously scaring them away. We had a client today that we were looking at, and her husband passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't initially know what you should do. So if you're a husband and wife and your spouse passes away, what you're typically going to do, now this is typical, is you're going to transfer the money from the deceased spouse account into your own account.
Right.
So let's say I had a $10,000 IRA of my own, and my spouse has a $10,000 IRA. And my spouse passes away, I'll take her $10,000 IRA and deposit it into my IRA, and I'll have a $20,000 IRA. That's typical. But that is not always what you're going to do.
Right.
There's a lot of thought that has to go into it. And they just added a new one, which is where I could leave the account as if it was my spouse's account, but treat it as my own. That's a whole world in and of itself. Just that, you know, think about what that means and how that could be beneficial to you. You know, especially if a spouse is younger than you. So in other words, if my spouse was, let's say, 15 years younger than me, and I die, and they inherit the money, they might want to leave that account in the inherited IRA, because then they can withdraw the money without penalty until they're 59 and a half.
Right.
Even if they're 50 years old, they'd still be able to withdraw it without penalty. So that's some interesting things that you can do. Let's see if we can get Richard, before we get to that 6:29 hard break. Richard, what can I do for you?
Good evening. Yeah, I was listening to your comments about the gold.
Yep.
And we're in a gold fund called CEF, and it's pretty much not going anyplace.
CEF is the Canadian Unit Investment Trust with gold and silver?
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. It's an interesting fund.
What would you recommend beside them? I mean, because I sort of agree with you. It's not going anyplace. It's just bouncing up and down, up and down. What would you recommend in getting into instead of CEF?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big gold investor, period. You know, I would just look for a more logical stock portfolio before I would go with a gold portfolio. That's the way I look at it.
Well, that's what I'm looking for, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're going to have to hold, because I had to take this hard break in 3 seconds, and I'm going to come back to you when we come back from the break, okay? Hold
all
with
right,
me, Richard.
Good.
We'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Maddie Bennett, and we're on an open show. We're not very popular tonight, Maddie.
We're not. We're only on, our third call? halfway through already?
We're halfway through, and the phone number, and there's nobody else online but Richard, so we're going to go to Richard in a second. Just want to let everybody know, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. We're going to go back to Richard. Richard, are you still there?
Yes, I am. And yes, CEF, what they describe it as Sprott Physical Gold.
So right, CEF
I'd like
is...
to maybe get out of that into something more practical that would gain me more money.
CEF is the Central Fund of Canada, is what it's called. And it's an open-end mutual fund that owns 75% gold and 25% silver. Okay, and they hold it, and they hold it in a vault. So they, you know, as it's when it was originally purchased, and a closed end fund means that they brought in, let's say, $500 million, and they bought 75% of that in gold bullion and 25% of that in silver bullion. Put it in a vault and just keep it there. That's it. Period. That's all they've done.
Gotcha.
And then they have some expenses to maintain that, so they have to sell a little every year to maintain the vault and all the, you know, the expenses to run the fund every year, okay? And And that's why it doesn't do that lot, you know, because it's expensive to maintain all that stuff. And the price of gold's got to go up a reasonable amount in order for that to really make a significant profit of any sort. Okay, so, you know, if you still wanted gold, it's a little cheaper to go to GLD, which is the gold ETF, which does very similar to CEF, but it's because it's so much bigger, it's not as expensive as running CEF, which is a closed-end fund. Long story on that one. But I think you're at the point where you're saying, I don't know about this gold thing. I've been doing this for a year. You know, so I think it's just a good diversified portfolio of U.S. stocks. And I would probably lean a little more toward international and small cap and mid cap as opposed to large cap U.S. But you never want large cap U.S. not to be a fairly significant portion of your portfolio. So, in other words, you know, like, if our typical allocation to U.S. large cap is 40% or 50%, let's say it's in that neighborhood, I might go down to 35% U.S. large cap, you know, or 40% if I'm at 50%. Then I would add a little more small cap, a little more mid cap, and international. Why? Well, because the U.S. large cap for the last 8 to 9 years has outperformed, and outperformed in a big way, too. And history tends to say that when you get that kind of outperformance, sooner or later, you revert to the mean where everything kind of catches up with each other. And right now, the international is way behind. The small caps are way behind the large cap. It's unprecedented, actually, almost. The divergence has taken place. So, but you don't get crazy. You never make a big bet one way or the other. So, and stick with index funds.
Okay, and like a mutual fund, so it's index mutual fund.
Index ETFs is usually the best way to go. I work with Schwab and Fidelity a lot. So with Schwab, you would go with SCHF, which is their international. You'd go with SCHX, which is their large cap. You go with SCH.
I'm in Fidelity.
You're in Fidelity. I don't know the Fidelity symbols as well. I think Fidelity typically works with the SPY mutual funds, SPY. You know, so SPY is the S&P 500, and SPY, wish Chris were here, he'd tell us this all right off the top of his head.
I'm the wrong person for this.
Anyway, so those are some of the things to think about there, Richard. All right?
So I would go on to Fidelity and search for SPY then?
SPY, SPY is the name of the funds, the S&P ETFs. The S&P Standard & Poor's index funds are traded as ETFs, and they call them the SPY funds, SPY. And that's because all their funds, whether it's large cap, which is SPY, or they're the international, or they're small cap. It's always SPY something, you know, and that's how they define their funds. All right.
Okay.
But
so
you could just call the
SPY and see what it comes up with.
Well, you could just call the Fidelity broker and ask them, you know,
I want to,
and they'll take good care of you. They don't charge you anything, and they're not going to charge you anything to trade the ETFs. That's even more cool, you know. All right.
Exactly. Yes.
All right, buddy.
Thank
take
you
care.
Kindly.
Good call. Anyway, we're going to Steve in Owings Mills, but before we do, we just want to say we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask your question. We have lines open, so feel free to call in. Steve in Owings Mills, how can we help you?
Yeah, if you have a seasonal kind of business, some money comes in, and then maybe nothing comes in for a few months, and then a bunch comes in, how does the Social Security, how do they know, how do they assign the quarters? You know, you need 40 quarters. And
well, that's an easy one, Steve.
Go, yeah.
Okay. A quarter is nothing more than earning, say, $1,500. And if you make like $5,000 in 1 month in a year, that's considered four quarters. So it has nothing to do with whether you're actually working a calendar quarter by a calendar quarter, okay? That's not how it works. In Social Security land, if you have, at the end of the year, you have $5,000 in earnings, and you can look this up for me, Maddie, what mm-hmm. is considered a quarter, it's just a dollar amount. I don't care if you earned it in a day. If I can go work for somebody and they pay me $5,000 in one day, and at the end of the year, I say, hey, I had $5,000 of earnings, they call it four quarters.
Yeah, so it's $1,510.
There you go, $1,510. Every $1,510 of earnings you make, it's considered a quarter. Do that four times. You do that $6,040, I guess it would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty good math,
damn,
wasn't it?
Quick.
$6,040. You would have four quarters just because you earned $6,040.
So it's really what you annually report on your tax return.
Correct. And all I have to do is say, hey, I went down and worked at the Royal Farm and I made $1,500 in a month. Well, they'd say, okay, you made a quarter. You got a quarter. There was a guy that called in a few weeks ago and I said, you know, if I'd say to your wife, hey, go get a job at 7-Eleven, earn $5,000 and then you can quit because then you'll get your last four quarters. And he said, that ain't going to go over real well, Drew. And I said, I understand. If I said that to my wife, she would let me know beyond no certain terms that wasn't a good idea.
Now, that's your gross wages. Is that what they're looking at?
Yeah, it's your FICA taxable wages, you know. So if I was self-employed, it would be my business net business income, which would be my SE taxable income. Okay?
Your net business.
Yeah, mm-hmm. which when you're a self-employed person, you pay it on a Form SE, self-employment tax. It's part of your 1040 tax return. You know, like you have Schedule A and Schedule B. Self-employed people have an SE schedule. That's where they report their FICA tax.
And, that's at the end of the year they do that, or they have to...
When you file your tax return. Yeah, at the end of the year, in April, when I file your tax return, if you were a self-employed person, I would say, hey, your Schedule C says you made $5,922, you know? Well, then you only get three quarters because you didn't earn $6,040. You got to make $6,040 to get the four full quarters.
Does that FICA tax, can that be paid at the end of the year all in one lump sum, or does that have to be?
Yeah, but it can be paid all in one lump sum, but they might charge you an interest penalty if you don't pay in your safe harbor estimated taxes.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
I got to
mm-hmm.
take my last
Wonderful.
Break. Good call, Steve. Great question. I got to go. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. We're on the last quarter, so if you want to get in, now's the time to call, 410-922-6680. I'm just making Anita wait here. Go ahead, Anita. Take it away. This is Drew Tignanelli, and I have a question for you. Is your financial advisor a doctor of personal financial advice? Do you get strategies to reduce taxation, Social Security, Medicare advice, sophisticated retirement planning, investment allocation strategies, estate planning, or help with any issue of money? It is time you do a financial physical with me and my team at the consulate and experience the difference. You hear the depth of knowledge we have about personal finance, so do a financial physical and you'll experience what we believe an advisor should do for you. They should be independent, experienced, credentialed, fee-only, comprehensive fiduciaries. They should be a doctor of personal finance and not salespeople selling you products. Set up an introductory meeting by calling 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or go online, financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com. It's time you experience the difference.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Maddie. How you doing, Maddie?
I'm
We're hanging
good.
In there, right?
Yeah. I'm enjoying this show.
Yeah. It's slower, though,
it is.
We're on an open show. We have probably Lee on the line. I'm going to go to Lee in a second. But we probably could take at least two more calls if you wanted to try to get in. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. I also want to remind everybody, the book, The Financial Physical, is out and available on Amazon, $5.99. We priced it so that it would sell. It's 30 different in financial planning instructional tips at the end of each chapter. There's three at the end of each chapter, 10 total chapters. So there's 30 total tips on different things, be it investing or financial planning, or even like Maddie is an expert in the psychology of money and money management. Actually, I've said it many times that it took me 15 years, Maddie, to figure out that the psychology of money was far more important than the knowledge of money management. Because right. when I learned and figured out that I could talk until I'm blue in the face about great economic things. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not communicating with the client and understanding what they're thinking about,
right.
I didn't get anywhere, you know?
Exactly. And it's different for every client with how they're going to react to what you recommend. So you have to kind of go at it from different angle depending on who you're working with.
Go at it a different angle, understand how they're hearing what you're saying, mm-hmm. understanding what their life experiences were,
yep.
and things of that sort. It was about 20-some years ago that I finally came up with the foundation of all financial planning, which is what you think about money will determine everything you'll do with and for money.
Mm-hmm.
And until you understand that, You're worthless to the client,
yep, exactly.
Because you're just out there trying to sell them something if you're not really thinking about that. So anyway, we could go on with that for quite a while,
yes.
but we got to go to Lee. He's sitting here waiting, saying, "Okay, Drew, enough of that." Lee, what can I do for you?
I've got three quick questions. First, the SPY, is that the same as the 500 fund?
SPY, Sam Paul Yellow, right?
Yeah, is that the same as the S&P 500?
That is the S&P 500. That is the original S&P 500.
Okay. The next question is, Tesla's been up and down in the last few months pretty dramatically. Now it's up to 260, but at one point it was like 380. What do you think of Tesla as an investment at this point?
You know, that. I'm not going to... I don't want to try to go one way or the other on Tesla. I mean, you know, nobody wants to count Elon Musk out. And, you know, Tesla's close. If it's not worth $1 trillion right now, it probably could be. But, you know, he's got so many ideas of what he wants to do to use Tesla to make money. You know, you might be surprised that he could be the next Apple. And, you know, for all I know, I have no idea. It's a difficult thing to say since Tesla is already worth a tremendous amount of money. That's the best I could say.
Yeah, okay. The third question is, I hear you mention like Fidelity and this, that, and the other, but not very often do you ever say anything about T. Rowe Price. Can you... If you don't want to say anything, I can understand.
No, T. Rowe Price is an active management company, you know, whereas, you know, they don't typically sell index funds. So that's one reason.
Right.
Now, T. Rowe Price actually has some excellent actively managed mutual funds. As a matter of fact, T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation. It'd be hard for somebody to argue that T. Rowe Price Capital Appreciation is not one of the greatest all-time funds ever managed. You know, I mean, it's been a great, great fund for many years. T. Rowe Price Global Stock Fund, T. Rowe Price Blue Chip Stock Fund. They have some great funds, do some great things. You know, but when you put them up against indexes, the indexes are cheaper and a lot of times they outperform them anyway. So that's what you have to think about. All right.
Okay.
Good question,
all right,
Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent questions. Keith in Baltimore County. How can we, or is that city? Whatever.
Baltimore County.
Baltimore County. Keith, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just started Social Security. Took it at 63, so I'm early.
Okay.
It's direct deposit, so there's no stubs. Nobody ever told me anything. Are they taking taxes out of that?
Only if you ask them to. That's your choice. That's your choice. If you, when you signed up for Social Security, if you told them to take taxes out, then they're taking taxes out. If you didn't, then they're not.
I didn't recall them asking, but I mean, Social Security is going to be taxable in Maryland, right?
Social Security is not taxable in Maryland, period. Unbelievable. It's one of the things they don't tax.
No, but it's going to be taxable federal.
It depends on your income. What's your overall general income? $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 in retirement?
Well, I also I have a local government pension, so between the two now, it's about $60,000.
So probably...
I'll be under the 100, but... And exempt from Maryland tax, but that doesn't start till I'm 65, right?
That's correct. When you're 65, you get that $750 deduction. You're single, I'm assuming, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you'll get that deduction. But federally, your Social Security is probably going to be anywhere from 50% taxable, maybe slightly higher, and it just depends on how big your pension is compared to your Social Security. And that's a really weird calculation. You can go online, look it up, and you can figure out how much of your Social Security is going to get taxed. So you might want to call Social Security up and say, hey, I'd like to begin withholding of taxes on my Social Security.
Okay, they would withhold
withhold federal.
Okay, but they would withhold Medicare tax, right? Because I'm still susceptible to that.
They will not withhold Medicare Part B until you turn 65 years of age. There are no Medicare taxes on your pension or your Social Security.
Oh, okay.
But you will pay for Medicare Part B when you turn 65.
And once you're on Social Security, you no longer pay Social Security tax?
No. If you go out and earn income, you will pay Social Security and Medicare tax, but you have to earn income. You got to get a job or you got to start a business, and then you'll pay Social Security and Medicare tax on that. But it has nothing to do with your Social Security income. Keep in mind, you can't make more than $21,000 when you're collecting Social Security before you're 67 years of age. Okay?
Okay, well, I'm not making anything now.
Well,
and when
keep
you turn
it that
65,
way.
You pay Medicare, you pay premiums, but you don't pay tax anymore.
Correct. You pay Medicare premiums. You're already paid up for Medicare Part A, but it's Medicare B. All right?
Thank you.
Great question. Excellent. Jim in Centerville, how can I help you?
Good evening. Great show as always. I'm looking at an inheritance. I don't know what the amount will be. Can I just put that in a Roth?
No, you can't. You can't. If I inherited $100,000 from my mother, I couldn't just pick that $100,000 up and put it into a Roth. Okay, the only way you can get money into a Roth is either you're working and you're putting in contributions to a Roth. And it's limited depending on whether you're in a company plan or whether you're doing a Roth IRA. Or if I already have a bunch of IRA pre-tax money, I can pick that up, put it into a Roth or any portion of it, and pay the income taxes on that money that I shift from the IRA over to the Roth. Am I making that clear? Those are the only two ways you're going to get money into a Roth.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I got that.
So okay. Do you have a lot of pre-tax money in IRAs or 401k?
Well, I don't know if it's a lot. It's about 170.
Okay. So let's say you inherited $50,000 and you said, hey, I'd really like to get a lot of money into Roth. What you could do is you could take a hunk of your pre-tax 401k or IRA. You can move it to Roth and use your inheritance to pay some of the taxes for that. But you never want to do a conversion without a solid tax advisor making sure that you're thinking this out right. Okay?
Right.
Remember that. All right, buddy.
All right.
Great question.
Thank you very much.
Excellent question. Yeah, a lot of people think, Maddie, that you can just throw a bunch of money into a Roth. It's not that easy, unfortunately.
No, I wish it was.
We'd have a lot more money in Roth right now if it was. Anyway, we're out of time, of course. It always a delight to be with you, you know, in person. And even Anita, it's always a delight to be with Anita in person, you know. See her, I always wonder if she's sneering at me or is she laughing. Now I see she's laughing, so that's good to see. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna